How would you like a 15% discount to my daily email, the stack of stuff, the show notes, discounts to the conference, all of that? All you need to do is text the word show to 33777. You'll get the annual subscription with a 15% discount to my daily email. You'll get the stack of stuff, the links to the show notes, discounts to the conference, and so much more. All you have to do is text the word show, S-H-O-W, to 33777. Text show to 33777.
Welcome to the Eric Erickson Show podcast, hour one.
My fellow Americans, welcome. It is Eric Erickson across the United States of America, and it just so happens to be an open line Friday, 877-973-7425. Should you wish to be on the program, you can text Eric, E-R-I-C-K, to 33777. Get all the information about the show. Had a great time at WDBO last night. Still here, headed home from Orlando back to Atlanta tonight. But a great, great time here and a great crowd last night at Wakaiva Island. It's fantastic. Great people, great people. Now, we got to get into the big news of last night. Iran and Israel going at it last night. Israeli attacks on Iran. I want to go back to Monday. General Thomas McKenzie was on Face the Nation, and this came after the spin from the pro-Hamas people, the anti-Semites, was like, oh, this was just for show. If Iran really wanted to do something, Iran could have done something. And they didn't. This is General McKenzie, and I need you to listen to this entire audio for a point that must be made because he brings it up.
I think this was a big attack by Iran. I think this was as close to a maximum effort as they could generate, and I'll illustrate it in this way. Iran has over 3,000 missiles of various types scattered around the country. They have about 100, probably a little more than that, missiles largely in western Iran that can target Israel. Based on what the Israelis are saying, I believe they fired most of those weapons at Israel. The Israelis obviously were able to intercept most of them. Iran could not replicate last night's attack tonight if they had to.
We can leave him there. Iran could not replicate the attack if they wanted to. What happened last night is Israel called Iran's bluff. Now, what do I mean about that? Well, the Iranian foreign minister was on CNN. And this is the Iranian foreign minister, Emir Abdollahian, talking through a translator to CNN.
In case the Israeli regime embarks on adventurism again and takes action against the interests of Iran, the next response from us will be immediate and at a maximum level.
You got that? In case the Israeli regime embarks on adventurism again and takes action against the interests of Iran, the next response from us will be immediate and at a maximum level. Israel has called their bluff. Why? Because I don't know that Iran, as General McKenzie said, has the arsenal to be able to respond again. Retired Admiral Stavridis was on Morning Joe. They had one of those panels, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 talking heads. This is the Admiral.
I think it was indeed a muted strike, a limited strike. Clearly, Israel, as we talked about earlier in the week, Joe, had a basket of options here. They could have gone big. There were certainly voices in Israel calling for that. They could have simply left it as cyber, non-kinetic kind of operation. They chose, as you and I talked about a few days ago, kind of in the middle. And I think what they sought to do and they accomplished was to show that they can penetrate Iranian air defenses. We'll know a bit more here over the next 24, 48 hours as battle damage assessments come out. But I, for one, believe that we're now in a 90% probability that this will settle down, go back into the shadows, follow a path of de-escalation. I think there's still a 10% chance it could flare up in a bigger way.
We can leave him there. Okay. Let me explain this, put a bigger picture on this. I mentioned this yesterday, this axis powers that have shaped up between Iran, Russia, and China. And essentially what happens is Iran sends oil to China. China sends technological components back to Iran, which makes weaponry for Russia and itself and terrorists. Iran used that technology, their drones, their rockets, their missiles, fired all of that at Israel. And keep in mind, these are the same weapons Iran is sending to Russia to use in Ukraine. Then what happened? 99% destruction by Allied forces. In other words, Iran and China and Russia thought they had closed a technology gap with the West. And firing what they fired, over 300, remember, some of them were outer atmospheric missiles, surface-to-surface missiles that went out of the atmosphere, designed to come back in, and Israeli forces were able to take out those missiles, Reagan Star Wars defense style, in outer space. We have video of them, explosions in the upper atmosphere. By the way, there were remarkable videos. You should Google them and see. They threw their best at Israel. And they bluffed and they said, oh, Israel, if you come after us, we've got way more to fire at you. We've got better stuff to fire at you. Maybe they do. But given that 99% of what they fired was destroyed, the odds are they don't. General McKenzie's probably right. They don't have a massive arsenal to be able to replicate an attack like that. Then here's the tell. After the attack was over, the Iranian response was to deny Israel did anything. Iran's position, unless it's changed since I took to the air, Iran's position was that, in fact, there were no attacks, that Israel did nothing, that Israel was incapable of doing any damage. They've now confirmed, it looks like, some minor things, but that Israel didn't really scratch us. That suggests to me it's Iran now saving face. Now, I could be completely wrong. I am no expert. I just know the experts. And I do know enough about the situation just as a product of my upbringing. But when Iran fires over 300 missiles and drones at Israel and it causes no impact, and Israel is then able to do a limited strike into Iran, Syria, and Iraq and penetrate Iranian airspace and Iranian countermeasures effectively, that sends the signal that actually the Western military alliance is still outpacing the Eastern Axis. And this gives rise to China as well, because you've got to remember some of the things that have been happening in China. In China, they released their most advanced aircraft carrier. It caught on fire. And in the last month or so has cracked in half. China has released its most advanced submarine. It sank. China is not developing weaponry well. Remember, they fired a bunch of people from the Chinese Air Force because it turns out they were filling up the nuclear missiles with water instead of fuel because they didn't have enough fuel to put in the missiles. It was all for show. As Xi Jinping is trying to do a corruption crackdown. This is the problem with Chinese communist regimes. This is the problem with every communist, every totalitarian regime. The whistleblowers are afraid of dying, so the whistleblowers never blow the whistle. And then when push comes to shove, you realize they've been outpaced. This is also why China is engaging in backdoor measures against the United States through hacking and other measures. They're trying to use low-level fights against the United States in ways they think they can get us, because they're not really sure their untested military can do anything. The last major fight of the Chinese military was maybe Korea. At the latest, Vietnam. They haven't had. The Chinese military has never really been tested in the last 50 years. And when they've deployed new technology, it hasn't worked out well for them. They're still stealing ours. I've got several friends of mine who say, despite all the worry about hypersonic missiles in the American space gap, that they assure me that, where do you think China's stealing the technology from? Of course we've got hypersonic missiles. We just don't talk about them. So Iran sent oil to China, which sent back money and technology to build the weapons that Iran fired at Israel, which Israel, United States, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, France, the United Kingdom shot down successfully. Israel then fired its own homegrown weaponry loaded from planes that were allowed to fly through Jordanian airspace. That's a big story in and of itself. Fired at Iran and had impact and bypassed the Iranian air defense systems that were supported by the Chinese and the Russians. It tells me that if the West sticks together, we're still in a good place. There's all of this belly aching, particularly the hyper-online right. I want to talk about this a little while later. I'm afraid that a lot of the right is getting too hyper-online. Remember when the left got really hyper-online in the Obama administration? They were convinced they were dominant. They were winning. They never saw their losses coming. They were becoming increasingly belligerent, also increasingly anti-American, talking down the country, and the public rejected them. I'm afraid that's beginning to happen in portions of the right, that we can't beat them. We need to come home. We need to shore up. We can't secure our allies and also secure the border. We can't multitask. We can't do things, and we deserve what we get anyway because we're a sinful people. Now, this online rhetoric from too many people on the right, look what happened, folks. The Western Alliance was able to prevent the Eastern Axis weapons from getting through to Israel, and the Western Alliance weapons were able to penetrate the Eastern Axis defense countermeasures in Iran. If we fund Ukraine, Russia's not going to win. Our weaponry remains superior, and frankly, Ukraine is a good testing ground for our weapons. This was a good move by Israel. The fact that Iran is playing it down, that Iran is claiming that well, nothing really happened, it's not a bad thing. Richard Haass was on Morning Joe. Actually, I want to play this piece of audio from their conversation this morning. I think it's worth you hearing.
Richard Haass, was this just the latest and final round of shadow boxing between Israel and Iran, trying to prove something to each other, to their constituencies, to regional friends and enemies, or do you expect more?
I think we're all in violent or even nonviolent agreement this morning. This was carefully calibrated. The Israelis felt compelled to respond to show that they could reach Iran if need be. They could hurt them if need be, but they didn't hurt them this time. The fact that the Iranians are downplaying it at home suggests to me they don't feel compelled to retaliate against the retaliation. I think this is showed the Bibi Netanyahu were often critical. I think in this case, he resisted what he was getting pressured to do from his right. He did less rather than more. I think the Biden administration should feel pretty good in terms of calming down the reactions. And I think, excuse me, this is also a realization on the Israelis. They've got their hands full.
We can leave him there, but on this last point, that the Biden administration should feel pretty good. I don't know that the Biden administration should feel pretty good, because every time the Biden administration has said, don't do it, they get ignored. With Joe Biden, no means yes. Don't means do. The Biden administration stepped into this, tried to leverage American power to alter the situation, and the Israelis ignored them. Bibi Netanyahu was absolutely restrained in what he did, but he did send a mass signal to Iran, we're calling your bluff. We've got the technology to penetrate your defenses. You do not have the technology, Iran, to penetrate ours. It was the message that needed to be sent. But it's also a message in defiance of Joe Biden. American leadership is needed around the world. The problem is Joe Biden has been wrong about every major foreign policy decision of the last 50 years, and you couldn't teach him new tricks as a young dog. You're certainly not going to teach him new tricks now. But the rest of the world is moving past Joe Biden. Hello, America. Welcome. The phone number on this Open Line Friday, 877-973-7425. I gotta spend just a moment thanking a member of Congress. Because what we've seen now is Ukraine is going to get funded. Israel is going to get funded. And the Speaker of the House has managed to bring the majorities of the parties together in bipartisan coalition. We haven't seen this level of bipartisan cooperation in some time. And I think every American owes Matt Gaetz a round of applause. Buy him some drinks. Introduce him to some young girls, I guess, maybe, depending on your situation. That guy. Matt Gaetz ousted Speaker McCarthy to stop an ethics investigation into whether or not he had inappropriate relations with a young girl. And in so doing, he sabotaged Republican goodwill and harmony. And in so doing, he ensured that Ukraine has been funded with a bipartisan coalition. He has now galvanized Democrats and Republicans together to step in to save Mike Johnson as Speaker of the House. Remember that Kevin McCarthy, as Speaker of the House, gave conservatives a lot of power. In exchange, they gave him the speakership. In exchange, he was able to negotiate real-world spending cuts. And Matt Gaetz decided to sabotage the real-world spending cuts in order to scuttle Kevin McCarthy's speakership, in order to try to undermine the investigation into his behavior. And the result is a bipartisan coalition to fund Ukraine and Israel and to save the Republican Speaker of the House. And the far right populace in the House will say, well, now Johnson is owned by the Democrats, and that will just give Johnson the leverage to stop even negotiating with the far right. And will undermine the populists. Way to play checkers when you're on a chessboard, Matt Gaetz. Thank you. Recently, 10 regional banks have had their credit downgraded. They're going to keep racking up profits. Some are going to get sweetheart bailouts. Some are going to get sold to mega banks that are themselves too big to fail because they'll get bailed out by the federal government. You, my friends, are not going to get bailed out. You're not. That's why my friends at Swiss America want to teach you about the secret war on cash and to help you protect your hard-earned assets. They have a special report you can get completely for free by calling or texting my name, Eric Erickson, to 800-289-2646. 800-289-2646. The all-out war on cash includes digital forms of currency. It's spreading daily. You can get the secret war on cash report completely for free. Just mention Eric Erickson when you call or text 800-289-2646. That's 800-289-2646. Message and data rates may apply. You can also go to SwissAmerica.com/Eric. That's SwissAmerica.com/ERICK. This report is completely free. All right. I got to tell you, the latest episode of Shogun, this is the show you should be watching. You got to be a grown-up to watch it. There is some violence and language, but It's the best thing on TV. One episode left. It's a miniseries. There's not going to be a second season. It's incredible. I've debated whether or not to tell you guys this, but since I brought it up a couple of weeks ago, I need to put a period at the end of the sentence on this. Let me just tell you without the emotion, if I can. I told you all a couple weeks ago, actually started the show, prayer request. Our oldest was getting her genetic test. My wife's lung cancer is genetic. There's not a cure for it because it's genetic. And it was time my oldest wanted to be tested, have the gene test to see if she had inherited, because my wife's family, there clearly is an inherited cancer strain that for multiple generations, the women and the men in the family have traded off breast cancer, lung cancer, breast cancer, lung cancer. My wife's mother got the breast cancer. Her mother's sister got the lung cancer. Her aunt's daughter has the breast cancer. My wife has the lung cancer. We got the test results back yesterday afternoon. They're negative. Big relief. So praise God and thank you all for the prayers. A really emotional afternoon in the Erickson household to find out that my daughter does not have to worry about that. So thank you. Now I want to take some phone calls. It's an open line Friday here. 877-973-7425. If you wish to be on the program, and I want to start with Michael. Welcome to the show.
Hi. First of all, that's fantastic news. I'm so glad for you.
Thank you very much.
As a cancer survivor myself, I understand the emotion and the relief that you're feeling. My question is, and this may be a little simple, but Israel's stated goal when this whole started was to prevent terrorism from ever happening again and from the attacks ever happening again. Well, this all starts with Iran, with the training and the weapons. And the oil that Iran produces that they sell to China is providing the money. Is there a way that Israel could take out the oil refineries of Iran, either with a missile strike or covertly with some type of cyber attack within Iran? Would that not stop this? Iran doesn't have oil, they don't have money to sell it to China. China didn't give them the weapons, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
The great thing, so we have to break it down in a couple pieces. So when Iran exports the oil, it's in raw format. Iran does not have a lot of oil. It has internal domestic refineries, but it doesn't refine the oil before it ships it out. It pumps it into ships, and it's refined in China and elsewhere. What you really have to do is you have to shut down the rigs. The problem is, if you were to shut down the Iranian oil production facilities, one, it would actually be an ecological disaster. If you remember what Saddam Hussein did, blowing up the Kuwaiti oil fields in 1990, ecological disaster, and that would have impacted the whole of the Middle East, because most of Iran's oil platforms are in the Persian Gulf. So if you blow them up in the Persian Gulf, you're going to have oil spills contaminating our allies in Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates. It's going to mess up the Fifth Fleet, because the Fifth Fleet is housed in Bahrain, would have to go through the oil
slits. Is there a way to do cyber or something to them then?
I don't know about that. My assumption is, based on what I know about Iran from living over there, and is that they probably are not as internet connected as we are. It might be a possibility, and Israel should probably try. And in fact, there have been a number of TV series about the Mossad going into Iran and loading viruses into their systems to cause wreck havoc. So it might be possible, and it's probably something they should do. Now, the problem with that is that you and I have to also be prepared to pay massively higher oil prices and gas prices, because the reality is Iran slips out enough oil that it actually pads out the global oil market. If Iran were to stop the production, if Israel were to shut it down, if you're prepared to pay $6-7 for a gallon of gas, which maybe it's worth it to shut down Iran, but it would have global ramifications if Israel did this, which is the biggest reason I think Israel hasn't done it, is it would have massively global ramifications that would hurt Israel as well because of oil prices. Bill, you're going to be up next. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Eric. How are you today?
Great. How are you?
Good. I'm so happy to hear about your daughter.
Thank you.
And before I get to my comment, my real comment, my wife and I started watching Shogun last night. We got halfway through it. It was right before bedtime. We got halfway through it. My wife said, I can't watch any more of this before we go to bed. It's just too much for her.
I can't watch it before bedtime because I stay up all night thinking about it. Yes, it's so good. But yeah, I mean, it's intense. It's and by the way, for folks, there's not a lot of violence in it, and it's not a lot of gory violence, but it's just, it's intense. The pacing, the plotting, everything is so well done.
Yeah, it is excellent. But my real reason for calling is this past Sunday, I was watching Fox as I normally do, and I decided I know what they're going to say. I want to hear what CNN has to say about what's going on in Israel. And I picked up on a show hosted by Fareed Zakaria.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And yeah, I am too. He had a small panel, and they continued to refer to Iran, China, and Russia as the axis of resistance. I mean, that literally sent a chill up my spine, because I'm thinking that makes them so sympathetic. And to me, that attitude ties into what we're seeing on college campuses, what we see in this administration. I mean, just that they're the good guys.
Yeah, okay. So I do have to say that the term is a level of self-identification. The Iranian revolutionaries, after 1979, began referring to themselves as the Axis of Resistance. And in their coalition with Syria, they have continued to use the label. So it is a self-label, but it's propagandistic. And for a media that blasts Republicans and conservatives for being propagandistic, you would think that they would not be so eager to embrace the self-identified term of Iranian resistance. It's much more an axis of evil than an axis of resistance. Mm-hmm. And part of the problem is, you know, Fareed Zakaria, he's had his moments where I'm kind of like, man, I can't believe this guy has come to his senses. But he's one of those global elitists who, he doesn't view himself as an American. He views himself as a person of the world. And I got no use for that. I really don't. And his worldview is antithetical, I think, to a peaceful American-led world. So I try to tune him out. I'm not surprised that he would embrace Iranian self-labels. But yeah, this is not an axis of resistance. It is an axis powers. It's an axis of evil. 877-973-7425. Nelly Bells at the Free Press. I want to read you what she has written here. Bowles, I guess her last name is. I got to read you this. This is mind-blowing to me. Biden continues paying off successful young voters. Sorry, I mean forgiving student debt. Biden this week paid off $7.4 billion in student loans, making his total student loan cancellation something like $153 billion. And by cancellation, I mean tax dollars were used to make the ledger go to zero. How much exactly? From Penn Wharton's analysis, we estimate that President Biden's recently announced new plan to provide relief to student borrowers will cost $84 billion, in addition to the $475 billion we were previously estimated for President Biden's SAVE plan. But that goes to really needy people, right? Well, actually, at least 750,000 of the households are making over $312,000 a year in annual household income. Meanwhile, to anyone who questions this allocation of resources, the White House answer is to shame them from official White House accounts by listing how much in pandemic loans were forgiven for House Republicans who own individual small businesses, which is weird because the reason businesses needed pandemic relief was because the White House banned them from operating. It's a trap. And the only answer is to pay off every media studies PhD student loan. Colleges, for their part, are now charging up to $100,000 a year. Yes, literally. And since that's ultimately going to be paid for by the taxpayers, why work to make it less expensive? Why cut quarters? We need to remodel the cafeteria. This is the elitism of the Democratic Party coming home to roost. It really is remarkable, the demographic shifts within the party dynamics as so many working class and middle class people are becoming Republican, who used to be in the Democratic coalition, non-white members of the middle class, the working class, headed to the GOP because of stuff like this. If you're listening to me out there right now, somewhere in the country, you're in a work truck, you're a plumber, you're an electrician, you're a roofer, you didn't go to college and you make a really good living, you take care of your family with your hard work, you're bailing out the guy who got the women and gender studies degree. You're bailing out the girl who got the master's in puppetry arts, learning the useful skill of sticking her arm at the backside of a Muppet so she could be like Jill Biden. You are bailing these people out. Your hard work, your money. You're bailing out the college loans of someone who went to college and now makes over $300,000 a year because Joe Biden wants their vote more than he wants your vote. Joe Biden wants their vote more than he wants your vote because he thinks you're still going to vote for him, but they might not, and he needs to bribe them to vote for him, and then maybe they, not you, will give him a campaign donation because they have more money than you. That's what this is about. This is a deeply demented and unfair system where those who have not must be those who bail out those who have. I mean, this isn't communism. And you need to understand, I forget who the political philosopher was who pointed this out, but what's happened to this country is we haven't moved to socialism. We haven't moved to communism. It looks like socialism. Just follow along with me here. I'm not trying to provoke an argument with those of you who listen to other talk shows. You're convinced, oh, we're all socialists now. No. What's happened is we've moved from a free market, not to socialism where we thought we were going, but to a technocracy of elites who have decided that they should plan our lives for us. And in exchange, we should make them comfortable as a reward for what they're doing for us. That's not socialism. That's a technocratic bureaucracy. And the elites are in charge. The elites are all about capitalism and the free market for themselves, just not for you. They actually don't think you can benefit from capitalism and the free market, and if anything, have worked to make sure you can't. So you must pile up on the social safety net. The best way to undo this is to shrink the size of the federal government and insist in arm's length transactions. It is to return to the free market. It is to deregulate. It is to stop bailing out the big and the powerful and the too big to fail. It is for government to stop picking the winners and losers. It is for us to shrink the size of the federal government. And it's possible if we have the will to do it still. One of the groups fighting to make it happen is Americans for Prosperity. They go into states and they advocate for the conservative movement. They knock on doors. They persuade people that our side and our issues are right. They advance causes that shrink the size and scope of the federal government and even state regulations. They work for families. They work for the free market. They work for school choice. They work for you. And you can be a part of it by going to AmericansForProsperity.org/Eric. AmericansForProsperity.org/ERICK. You can go sign up with Americans for Prosperity today. At AmericansForProsperity.org/ERICK, go sign up with Americans for Prosperity. They'll teach you how to be the most informed conservative activist in your circle of friends. They'll teach you how to engage. They will teach you how to go to your state legislature or your local government to advocate for free market solutions, to advocate for families, to advocate for school choice. And if you don't want to do any of that, you're an introvert, you don't really want to do that, they'll still give you all of the sharpest, latest, current information so that you are the most informed person in your circle of friends. And you, just through relations with your friends, can persuade them that our side is right. AmericansForProsperity.org/ERICK. Go sign up with them today. And, yes, I'm talking to you. Charlie says he taught you well there. A little inside joke here. Welcome, it's Eric Erickson, Open Line Friday, 877-973-7425. I'm glad Charlie's back in the room for this. And this is going to be so over all of your heads, but I will make it relatable for you. First, this hour of the program is brought to you by First Liberty Building and Loan. If you're a business, you need $250,000 or more to grow your business, and you see opportunities where your current lender doesn't, First Liberty might be able to help you. They've been helping businesses since the 90s. The Frost family, they're geniuses at this. FirstLibertyGA.com. All their contact info is there. Spend 10 minutes with them. See if they're a good fit for you and if you're for them. FirstLibertyGA.com. Tell them I sent you. Okay. All right. So if you will remember, the dean of the law school at University of California, Berkeley, hosted the senior class or the third-year law students at his home, and 10 of the students disrupted it, giving speeches, refused to leave. Well, they were ousted. So now the students, Berkeley Law for Palestine, has issued a statement. I'll read it in part. There was no disturbance or disruption of the event caused Ms. Afana or the students supporting her. Ms. Afana calmly began to welcome everybody and say a few words about Ramadan before Dean Chemerinsky began to shout at her and Professor Fisk grabbed her. At no other campus event would it be allowed or appropriate for a professor to yell, berate, or threaten a student in that way for simply speaking, let alone put hands on one, and it must not be condoned here. The university must publicly affirm the student's right to free speech and correct Dean Erwin Chemerinsky's claim that there was no First Amendment right to free speech at the dinner, as the dinner was a public forum. The students planned the walkout at the dean's dinner to raise awareness of the University of California's complicity in the genocide and made this purpose clear, yet Dean Erwin Chemerinsky denied the students' First Amendment right to free speech and falsely claimed the students only protested his dinner because of his Jewish identity. Maybe it's because they were caught on tape attacking him for being a Jew. Okay, so the Berkeley Law for Palestine student chapter is demanding the University of California re-educate Dean Erwin Chemerinsky on free speech law to remind him that what these students did, it was their free speech rights. Every single lawyer listening right now is laughing. And there's a reason why every single lawyer listening right now is laughing. Because there is one textbook that every law school in the United States of America uses to teach the First Amendment. It is such a good textbook, I still have my copy of it. Because it is world-renowned, the expert on free speech in the United States. He's still living, by the way, the expert who wrote this book. And every law student gets a copy of it in law school if you take free speech law. Literally, I have my copy of it. And the author of the textbook, his name might sound familiar to you. It's Erwin Chemerinsky, the dean of the University of California Law School, where these idiots want the expert in the United States on the First Amendment. They want the University of California to re-educate him on the First Amendment. What are they going to do? Give him his own textbook and say, read this chapter, Erwin. Read what you wrote. Oh my God, these kids, they need to be expelled for being idiots. Literally, the expert on the First Amendment, the guy that everyone, including the U.S. Supreme Court, turns to on the First Amendment. It's him. They want him re-educated on the First Amendment because he didn't want them protesting at his private home and knew the law better than them. These people should be flogged, if not expelled, for just being idiots.